This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we take a look at key issues that affect the UK campus and the Lexington area. I'm your host, Noah Richard, and today we're discussing ovarian cancer awareness. September is Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month. Ovarian cancer causes more deaths than any other cancer of the female reproductive system, even though it is relatively rare. It is so deadly because it usually isn't diagnosed until it is in the later stages. In 1987, the UK Markey Cancer Center began its ovarian cancer screening research program. Women who have a family history of the cancer or those who are over the age of 50 are eligible to receive free ovarian cancer screenings. WRFL reporter Morgan Henry fills us in on how important awareness of ovarian cancer is.
Disease control and prevention say that 20,000 women in the United States get ovarian cancer each year, and it is the fifth leading cause of cancer death. In Kentucky, 7.2% of every 100,000 women die from ovarian cancer each year. The CDC also says that there is nothing to prevent ovarian cancer, but if the cancer is caught in the earlier stages, it can be treated through a variety of options. There is a lot being done around town and on campus to try and make people more aware of the cancer and what to do if you think you may have it. Member of the Bluegrass Ovarian Cancer Support Group and ovarian cancer survivor Sue Jacobs says how us as a university and town can help promote ovarian cancer awareness.
So I think just being aware of the symptoms, the four main symptoms that they have actually identified with evidence-based studies can be put in the acronym BEAT, B-E-A-T, so bloating, eating difficulties, so that could be feeling full quickly or not having much appetite. Abdominal, A is abdominal pain or pelvic pain, and then T is trouble with your bladder. And you can have increased urgency and frequency.
Simply knowing what to look out for could help in the slightest way. Sue Jacobs also mentions that there are other symptoms to be aware of that some people tend to look over.
Now there are other vague signs like fatigue, indigestion, back pain, pain with intercourse, menstrual irregularities, things like that.
The hope for this segment is to bring attention and awareness to the community and campus about the importance of ovarian cancer.
Our guest is the doctor who directs and conducts free ovarian cancer screenings at UK, Dr. Ed Pavlik. Dr. Pavlik has many publications on ovarian cancer and gynecological oncology. He is the director of the ovarian cancer screenings here at UK. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Pavlik.
Glad to be here.
So first, we'll just start off. Is there enough information out in the community about ovarian cancer? And what exactly should people know about it?
Well, nobody likes information about cancer. That's the first thing you have to keep in mind. And the American Cancer Society has done a great job of putting out information, but the question boils down to, just like it does with anything that you broadcast, does it get anywhere? Does it get heard? I think the capturing moment about ovarian cancer is that it usually strikes someone in their golden years. The kids are off at college, maybe they're retired, they're having fun, they're healthy, and all of a sudden they're 50. 55 years old, and they have this terrible, terrible diagnosis. It is the silent killer. The symptoms that Sue Jacobs was talking about generally apply to later stage disease. The earlier you get to the disease, the easier it is to achieve a cure. For late stage disease, the earlier you get to it, the better it is to prolong life. But it's not really possible with late stage disease to achieve a cure.
Are there any particular risk factors associated with ovarian cancer besides just older age?
Well, the interesting thing about ovarian cancer is that if the ovary is overworked, in other words, if there's too many cycles because a person started ovulating early and stayed ovulating late, then we have a group that has a higher risk of ovarian cancer. And there's two examples of that group. One are nuns. The nun study is longstanding, first reported about the time of the Civil War, to the extent that when I wanted to quote it, I could never find the quotation for the paper. But it's been recapitulated with some modern stuff in the last 2 years. And the other model is the barnyard chicken. And, you know, if you look at those hens that are kept under controlled lighting so that they'll lay lots and lots of eggs, they certainly have an overworked ovary. And if you compare them to the same genus species that are running around being chased by the rooster but not laying all those many eggs, the incidence of ovarian cancer in the laying hens is much higher than those that are their sisters out in the barnyard. So what can we expect? What's the protective factor? If you arrest the ovary by having large families, if you take oral contraception, those are big protective factors that reduce the risk. In the end, people, the ethnic groups with large families are catching up to the ethnic groups with small families, namely Caucasians. So I expect at some point the protective effect of large families in this country will diminish, and we'll all be about the same risk, and that's the risk of Caucasians today.
This screening program began in 1987 and now has expanded to lots of locations in Kentucky. Can you tell us about what happens when you go in for a screening, what the process is for that?
Sure. We allow 30 minutes. It's an appointment. At UK, not only do you get free parking right next to the building, which is a small miracle, but you get to come up to our suite where we have four different rooms. And the actual procedure takes about 5 minutes. It's a transvaginal ultrasound. The rest of the time is allowed for question answering, getting dressed again, getting undressed the first time. When we go out in the state, we can't be quite as efficient because travel time's involved. We travel to Somerset, Maysville, Elizabethtown, Prestonsburg, and we have dedicated facilities in Greenup and in Paducah. And so travel isn't involved there. The same 30-minute appointment, everything's the same except we have travel time and a little bit of inefficiency involved there. We communicate with the participant's doctor so that basically he has all the responsibility of what to instruct her, whether he thinks she should have a more higher-powered imaging like CT exam or MRIs or that she should have surgery. But we're really placing her back in the care of the person she's familiar with.
How has your program managed to expand so much in the past 29 years? How are you funded, and what is the history of that?
Well, we've had good luck. The biggest piece of good luck we had was that the Kentucky Extension Homemakers adopted us as a program, first with the members years ago committing $1 a year to us. But they had, 20 and 30,000 members, and that helped us get going. The second part of that is they participated, which means when you run a study, you need more than anything else participants. So that bit of good luck was a lot. We also were fortunate to benefit from the money that was from the tobacco set aside. And so a lot of our funding from the state comes from that. We've patched together some private gifts. We right now are part of a Kroger program that's a community rewards program. We've had NIH grants for different aspects of the program, not necessarily screening, but the effect of screening on women's attitudes if they had an abnormal exam versus if they had a normal exam.
So what if a woman gets an abnormal exam? What happens next?
Well, the first thing that we want to do is do what we call serial ultrasound, which means that we will follow her again and again until we're sure it's not going to go away. And we actually have a score that we created. It's called the Morphology Index. It's based both upon size and the type of morphology. 10 is the maximum you would have. And so in some sense, we can compare not only what we see and intuitively interprets objectively, but also to have a number that we can attach in terms of something getting a higher number and hence worsening or or stabilizing or getting a lower number and improving. And essentially, I'm a champion of not doing anything until we really have a number or a look of increased morphology that says something's happening. Roughly 60% of these things will go away in a very short period of time, and roughly 90% of them will go away. But I can't tell about that last few. I can't tell you how long it's going to take. And, of course, if it takes 3 or 4 years, there's a degree of stress associated with that.
As I said in the intro, ovarian cancer has a very high rate of killing somebody. What are the treatments available if it's caught early versus when it's caught late?
Platinum-based chemotherapy is the most successful thing, carboplatinum. There are a few things that are added in, but if a patient fails platinum therapy, that's a very, very bad sign, because the second lines that are there are really something you can't have a whole lot of confidence in. People have been cured who are platinum sensitive, and those people are fortunate, but they don't necessarily comprise a big group of people.
How successful has screening been in your program? Have you caught a lot of cases that may not have gone treated?
Well, if we our comparison, first of all, for survival, is that we compare the survival in our program, and that would be the 5 and 8 year survival, to people from Kentucky and also from UK Hospital who haven't been screened. And the survival rate is about 2.5 times better for people who have been screened relative to the unscreened ovarian cancer people. So that, you know, that's one overall measure. The second is early stage disease. We've been successful in that about 70% of what we've detected are early stage disease, which is where you want to be. And to achieve that, you not only have to couple the find, this looks like it is it, but also scheduling surgery quickly enough so that you haven't allowed time for the disease to become late stage disease because you were dawdling. So we've been very successful in being able to couple those two things. I think the programs that have not been able to do that have certainly not been able to do that coupling. And in the end, they've probably found early stage disease, but exploratory surgery to confirm it was, you know, way off 9 months later, and that was just way, way, way too long.
What can we do as a community, and what can people do in Lexington to make sure that women know about these screenings and know the importance of finding ovarian cancer early?
Okay, this sounds like you're asking me for a plug, so here's the plug. We do have two things. One is the website, ovarianscreening.info, and it's an information website that you can find out about the free ovarian cancer screening program at the University of Kentucky, and you can actually register by email through it or call the 800 number, 1-800-76-OVARY, and talk with somebody. Anybody who's 50 years or older is eligible. Anybody who has a family history of ovarian cancer down to age and is as young as 25 years old is eligible. And that is because they may have a risk that they've inherited. And anybody who has a confirmed relative with a genetic mutation like BRCA1 or BRCA2, they would also be eligible down to age 25. So that's the most important thing to know. I think the other thing to know is if you talk to women, you won't have any trouble finding somebody who knows about this. There are 45,000 women in our study. We've given over 260,000 free screens. That number of women would fill Rupp Arena 1.8 times. That's greater than the population of Richmond or Frankfurt, Owensboro, Somerset. So we're talking about the opportunity to ask somebody, and I'm sure if they haven't heard about it, they know somebody who has. So at church, at meetings or whatever, believe it or not, women talk. And that's, you know, that's the greatest, really, I'll tell you, it's the best form of communication for promoting our program.
Great. Thank you. Reporter Morgan Henry turns attention to the Bluegrass Ovarian Cancer Support Group's class called Survivors Teaching Students for students pursuing a medical degree.
In 2002, an ovarian cancer survivor developed the program Survivors Teaching Students. The mission of the program is to save women's lives by helping future healthcare providers learn to diagnose ovarian cancer in its earliest and most curable stages. Third-year nursing student Holly Kramer, who participated in the Survivors Teaching Students program, describes what was taught to her.
So each of them told us their story and how they found out they had ovarian cancer, and then the process they went through after, like treatments and surgeries and just dealing with the emotional side of it. And then after they each told us their stories, they told us some facts about ovarian cancer and things like how to recognize it, because the symptoms are so vague and it can mimic other diseases or things that are not as serious as ovarian cancer.
Plans to expand the program in hopes that word is spread more and more to new people in any way possible. Holly says the program was really eye-opening.
It was just very eye-opening because they went into so much detail about how horrible of a disease it is, because oftentimes it's not picked up until it's too late or until you're already in stage four because of the vagueness of the symptoms and everything. So it was just really eye-opening and informative to learn about how ovarian cancer can affect someone's.
We are back with Dr. Ed Pavlik. Dr. Pavlik, can tell us about the doctors or the Survivors Teaching Students program. Why did you all first found that program?
Well, that basically was an idea that came from the National Survivors Organization, and the Bluegrass Ovarian Cancer Support Group picked up on it, and they built it with really on the energy of Sue Jacobs, who is just a wonderful, wonderful person. I'm afraid of her, actually. She's that wonderful. I mean, she can get me to do anything. And basically, she has, I think we probably have as many as 12 or 15 people acting as instructors with medical students.
How has Survivors Teaching Students raised awareness? And why is it so important for survivors to teach new medical professionals how to deal with patients and this disease?
Well, I think a little bit of what was just said is very important. If we talk about any cancer, we're talking about diseases of old people. And survival is going to be measured by when people die, whether they have cancer or not, and there's a good deal of effort placed upon, so any of these efforts aren't going to do any good. But an ovarian cancer death is a horrible death. What we all hope for is to live without pain, die without suffering. I personally want to die in my sleep in the arms of a beautiful woman or dreaming about a beautiful woman. It may not be the case, but I don't want to die a horrible death. And I think what we have gotten across from people in the support group is they have lived through friends, lived through other members of the support group who have had these terrible, terrible experiences that ended their lives, that they have an awareness that this is just not talking about some disease for the elderly.
Because symptoms for ovarian cancer are so vague and can be easily mistaken for other things, what would you tell a woman who is experiencing symptoms of ovarian cancer, and when do they need to see a doctor?
Well, the first thing is to rule out ovarian cancer, because that's the one thing that's going to be eminently deadly. And so if they get to the point where a simple ultrasound says there's nothing wrong with your ovaries, their insurance company is going to be paying very little for that. It's going to be a quick and painless exam. They probably can get it through our program if they meet the age requirements. And then they're off to seeing somebody who can tell them where that pain is coming from, or why they're bloated. Most of the reasons for that are not ovarian cancer. In fact, in the clinic, of people who we are worried about having ovarian cancer, not in the screening program, more often than not, like 70% of the time, there is not an ovarian malignancy. And so, the fear factor shouldn't be there, but the resolution factor, let's get this out of the way and know that it's not ovarian cancer. That should be done, no matter what.
Would you say that the Survivors Teaching Students program is successful in helping future doctors see what ovarian cancer is and how to maybe diagnose it later on?
Yeah, I think it is from that aspect. It's also occurs early enough in the medical student career that they're really saying, okay, I like this. This is really medicine-oriented. This is person-to-person. I can't learn more than by talking to these three or four women who are telling me firsthand what's going on.
Thank you. Reporter Morgan Henry spoke with a survivor of ovarian cancer to find out what advice she has for other women.
While recognizing symptoms isn't the easiest, especially with how easy it is to mistake them with other things, I asked survivor Sue Jacobs what is something she wants women to know about ovarian cancer.
Listen to your body and don't be afraid to check something out. Especially, you know, a lot of times, and you'll realize this as you get older, and especially when you start a family, your life gets so busy, you tend to ignore yourself because there's other people that need you. But it is so important to not ignore, not ignore things that you're feeling, and be confident enough to go to the doctor and say, I'm having this. I really feel like I need to be checked out. Because
Sue went on to say that remembering the BEAT acronym is the best way to look out for symptoms: bloating, eating difficulties, feeling full quickly or not having an appetite, abdominal pain or pelvic pain, and then T is trouble with your bladder. You can have increased urgency and frequency.
What is something you want women, not only across Kentucky, but everywhere, to know about ovarian cancer?
I think the most important thing for them to know is that they have here in this state a program that exists nowhere else. That's not basketball. That's the Ovarian Cancer Screening Program. It's free and it's effective. They can Google about it, and they can go to the website, theovarianscreening.info, find out, more about it. That's a resource that I get calls about from people in other states. And if they retire to Hawaii, they can still come back to Kentucky and be screened in our program.
So you're doing your part on getting women tested for ovarian cancer. But what are your thoughts about the Cancer Moonshot program and its goals to speed up treatments and get more people into clinical trials?
Well, I feel that it's more like cancer is not one disease, and so we're not talking about just hitting the moon. So that's one big thing. And I also feel that the moonshot originally had a great lesson that it taught everybody. The Russians already did it. Okay, all we got to do is figure out what to do to get up there. That's not the case, with cancer. The speed at which this is being accelerated, it could be like putting up a Challenger rocket that has an O-ring that fails and leads to a disaster, or not. But I will say that in the absence right now of information about how it will be supported financially, Godspeed to it. Go ahead with it. In the end, we also have to say, if just talking about the University of Kentucky, are we in a position to just receive funding for 2 or 3 years to gear up for something? And can we do it that fast? And what are we to do with those researchers after the moonshot funding is over? And will it count for their professional promotion, or is it something that was regarded as just something that was short-term in the past? I hope it works, and I hope it gets funded, but we're probably half a year away from finding out all about that.
Can you tell us anything about clinical trials going on here at UK to find out more treatments, ways to prevent ovarian cancer?
Oh, in our department, G1 Oncology, we have many trials are going on, and these are shared with our patients. That's a step that's hard to do because doctors are busy. They're being made to see more and more people, and that's something that can be skipped. I believe the same trials we have, or that the MD Anderson has, can actually be experienced just about anywhere. Okay, so the one thing there is access to say that machine or that drug is pretty widespread just to achieve accrual. What's different, for instance, by being treated in the Markey Cancer Center in GYN Oncology is the team. It's now being proven by several publications that survival is much better if you're treated by GYN Oncology specialists at high-volume centers, which we certainly are at the University of Kentucky. And the survival difference isn't small, it's big. And what's going on there is when there's a bump in the road, when you have a bad reaction to a chemical treatment or to radiation, if that team can't help you, you'll probably fall off your schedule and give the tumor burden a chance to increase. So the most important thing I think about protocols is, while they can be available everywhere, you really want to go to where they're best delivered. And that's one of the proofs about the University of Kentucky is we are a designated cancer center. And that, to me, is a proof that we can deliver on those protocols and treatments in a way that's been received the stamp of approval from the National Cancer Institute.
And as just about with any type of testing, there are some critics. There are some doctors who have written that there's no good justification for testing women who don't have any symptoms of ovarian cancer. Clearly, you don't believe that. What would you say to these doctors?
I would say that, first of all, the number of genes that are somatic has increased from the original 2 to now 14. So the population that is a candidate is growing. The second thing, the technology that we use, the ultrasound technology, is almost dirt cheap. It's much cheaper than mammography, the instrumentation is. The actual number of individuals you need to apply it and the time the physician needs to actually look at the report are much smaller than things like mammography. So I think that from a financial standpoint, it's a very viable type of option. What are the downsides? Women are going to worry. If I tell them, I think this is going to go away, until it goes away, they're going to worry. So, the serial approach and things resolving will have a negative impact, there. The one big study that was done that really says that this does more harm than good was taking 19 women to surgery for every malignancy that it detected. And that was the U.S. trial called the PLCO trial. We take 2 people to surgery for every malignant, 2 people with benign tumors to surgery for every malignancy that we detect. The British, in their big study called the UK CTOX study, took 3 people to surgery for every malignancy. Those are good ratios. But that first ratio, that 19-1, that's where the evidence comes from that people want to use, that this is not a good thing to do.
And as we finish up, is there anything you would like to add, any takeaways, any keys to ovarian cancer that you'd like to tell?
Well, I think with any cancer screening, you'll notice that there's a de-emphasis. And I think you have to ask it this way. What type of roulette am I willing to pay? And it's a little bit like a stoplight. These things are signals that are changing from when you're younger to when you're older. You've got to decide when that light starts to flash yellow as you're getting older. Are you going to stop and get screening, or are you going to go right through that stoplight? And my recommendation is you go and get screening.
Thank you so much. We'd like to thank Dr. Ed Pavlik for being our guest this evening and giving us some great information on ovarian cancer and what we can do as a campus and town to promote awareness and make sure that people get screened. With ovarian cancer screening, we hope more women will become aware and seek help if they experience symptoms. You can visit ovarian cancer screening website at ovarianscreening.info. Thank you for joining us on tonight's Campus Voices. Stay tuned for more commercial-free programming on 88.1 WRFL-FM Lexington. I'm Noah Richard.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.